With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you, introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode, so click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by PDAX. PDAX is a homegrown cryptocurrency exchange that offers the best rates among local cryptocurrency exchanges. Download the PDAX app now on the Google Play Store, App Store, or Huawei App Gallery. Start trading Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other cryptocurrencies for as low as 50 pesos by signing up on podlink.co/hustleshare PDAX. Also powered by PodMachine, the simplest way to grow and edit your podcast. Sign up now at podmachine.com and use the code HustleShare to get one free edit.
And I was like, okay, let's just do this one instead. Like, this is like a realization that just staring right in front of me that I wasn't ready to accept yet because I'm supposed to be an architect. But there's this thing that's just knocking and hey, we're here.
Welcome to HustleShare, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here is your host, Ronster Baitiong.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Whole Share Podcast. We are with another OG who's been around again and who has a gazillion startups, but this is exactly why I want to know how he does his hustle. Because every single time he posts something on social media, there's a new startup that he's participating of. But before we get carried away, I need to introduce a guest and the man of the hour. Let's welcome OJ Lovis of RoboStep. Welcome to the show, my man. How's it going?
Thank you. Right. Thank you for having me, man. I've been a fan of your show since day one. Like when you posted that Hustle Share community group, I was like number five or something that joined.
Oh, thank you again. I haven't been doing really well in keeping that active per se. Again, I'm at the end of the day, I'm a founder, and as founders, you're gonna have to take tough trade-offs. And the trade-off that I always choose is that I choose my startup over anything else that I'm doing on the side, which is, again, I'm very, very impressed with what you do, because aside from obviously your main hustle, which is RoboStep, you're also part of several startups also. And that's what I want to do, because majority of the time, there's a misconception or there's this thing in the startup ecosystem that you should focus on one. But here you are thriving in a lot. All right. But before I ask you a lot of these things, I need to ask you the $1 million question. OJ, what's your hustle?
Right now, of course, Main Hustle still have a staff. So I, and for me personally, it's always been, the Main Hustle has been always to make houses beautiful, like make houses beautiful. Either it's going to be in photography, videography, and those TikTok videos, or like architecture. So more serious stuff, architecture and construction. So that's kind of like the hustle has for the past decade or so. It's like that's making houses beautiful.
And that's again expensive. Just at the end of the day, that's one thing that again is unique about you. You have a thriving and profitable business that affords you to do other stuff at the same time. Because one thing that I've seen a lot is startup founders who are into a lot of things or like trying to do a jack of all trades type of approach, but don't have a main hustle that's thriving. That's where problems usually arise.
Right.
Whereas for you, at the end of the day, if you strip you of everything else that needs to be done, your main hustle is thriving. That allows you to then do other stuff, which again, we will all cover later. But I need you first to buckle up, because we're going to have to go to the origin story all the way to Cebu, because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine. All right. It's been forever since I went back to Cebu. I think the last time I've been to Cebu was, if not late 2018, it was early 2019. Long time ago. And I miss a lot of places. Larsan, Ilaputi, Casa Verde. All these things.
Right. Baby
that give you high blood. With merienda as sunburst chicken. Okay.
Right.
But again, I want to understand, bro. I've known you as an entrepreneur for a long time now. Again, we have similar origin stories. You studied in UST. But before we even get to that, was there any inkling of entrepreneurship growing up? And did you see type of mentors that you had that kind of gave you this influence that allowed you to be an entrepreneur down the road?
Yeah, well, both my parents are employees, so I didn't really have any like firsthand, role model in terms of entrepreneurship. But my mom was doing side hustles while being a government employee. Both my parents, so mom and dad, but my mom has like side hustles like selling keychains and nice. Whatever. So during second grade, it actually sold like keychains and the stuffed toys in class, right? And then. Nice. 2 days after, they called me in the principal office and say, "Stop that shit!" Right? Like
they said that. Like, yo, OJ, stop that shit.
Yeah. Because also the teachers were also buying, right? The teachers were buying. It was disrupting classes. So it's like after 2 days. Now that was like my first experience. I felt like the high. Like, whoa, that was cool. Like people go to you, hey, I want your stuff, right? And that's kind of like where it started, like that spark for entrepreneurship. And always had this, even so from grade two, like grade four, I was selling like NBA cards. And grade three, I think it was Pog. Like, so
Pog.
Like that. Yeah, man. And then I played ball, like I played basketball. I think I got into the Milo SBP thing in elementary, and that kind of like focused all my attention to that. So from elementary, we were like basketball champions in Cebu. So in their high school champs was Don Bosco. So I went to Don Bosco for high school, still played ball there. But then they have these technical classes of drafting, things like that. And that's
Is Don Bosco in Cebu.
Yeah, Don Bosco in Cebu.
Nice. So that they really have reputation for really having an advanced, beyond the norm, they have an extra layer of like science and technology and even drafting, or again, in the arts.
Engineering, electrical, civil engineering, stuff like in high school, right? You get exposed to that.
Yep.
Then that's kind of where it started. Like, okay, like, looking at this and building like scaled model of houses, that's might spark the interest from there. But still, pretty much played ball. Like my main focus was still playing ball. Mm. And one of our star players in Don Bosco was playing for the Tigers. So this was like my idol when I was in first year. So he was drafted.
Who is this guy?
Mick Sumalinog was.
Michael Sumalinog. There you go.
So he was playing for the Tigers, and he was like the star player of DB like the senior players. So that's what like, I aspire to play ball in USD, something like that, right?
There.
Man. So that was kind of like where I aspired to be a Tomasian. So
yeah,
in college, I took up architecture, and then apparently. Architecture is not one of the courses that if you want to play ball. No.
You go to commerce. My that's my college where you only have 4 hours of school.
Right.
6 days a week, but it's just 4 hours. That's where you have Archie in USD is one of the hardest ones. It's a 5-year course, right?
It took me a while though, but yeah, right, I will get to that.
It's 5-year course to get there, but I'll just track back a little bit, OJ, because again, this is something that is always personal. And again, if you've been to Hustle Share for a long time, I always talk about the influence of varsity basketball to me. Because again, I was a Tiger Cub during high school, so played in the UAAP several years. But everything that I've learned or how I run and hustle now, I learned that through basketball. Like, you know, determination, getting through the rough times, you know, leaving your ego at the door, playing a role to get the win. And of course, going in day in and day out, even if it's hard, even if you don't feel like it, to really, you know, better yourself. And that translates very well into business. But in your experience, what were those things that you took from sports or at least basketball that you brought until, you know, you got to entrepreneurship?
Yeah, well, during my grade school days in San Carlos, University of San Carlos, that's where I played ball. This was really a great coaching staff, like, because we don't know shit, right, when we were kids. So that mentorship and then that team energy, because at grade school, you don't have like a really star player that would score 30 points, right?
Nope.
Yeah, so that team, that it really takes a team to win a championship. Right. And as you mentioned, you have a role to play. For young kids, you know, it's kind of like defense. You don't actually get to like dribble the ball even, right? You just gotta get it. So it's always one-to-one offense. Everybody goes here because, the grade six person will score and everybody else. That one, like the team play and how important the team is on and off the court. Because these were like my best friends, right? Even on and off the court, we were all together, and so we were just so in sync that it was inevitable just to win a championship, right?
Yeah,
so
that's great.
Yeah, and that championship mentality, I carried it over to high school. Just really like, you know, we're not in here for me, not for you. We're here to win a championship. So that's kind of like where it really boils down to. If you really want to win, it's going to be winning together.
Yep. And that's great. And then the spirit of competition, that never leaves you, right? It just translates in the startups, technically. You, in my head, if you just simplify it, in a way, I translate that into a new sport and I want to win. I come in not to like just be here just to participate. Fuck that. We're right. Trying to win here, right? And right. Winning can be attributed to several metrics, whether it's achieving a certain milestone or in the end, the championship is an end, right? That's the hardest one, which not a lot of people get to do. Now, again, UST, you're from Cebu. The dynamics will change. Manila is different than Cebu. And this is something that I always like to discuss with people who grew up in the province, studied in Manila, because there's always an adjustment period, right? Sure. Especially if you're, you know, living far from your family, it's not that easy. What are those things that you had to overcome? And again, you said it took a while for you to finish architecture. Standard one is 5 years. How long did it take you to finish yours and why?
All right, so let's start with that question. It took me like a decade, man, like 10 years.
Wow.
But apparently in USD, once you reach fourth year, you're tenured, so they can't kick you out anymore. Yep. So once you're in fourth year, but still you still have like a year to go, right? Uh-huh. So once you don't get kicked out, so you get kicked out first year, second year, third year for your bad grades. But once you get fourth year, they can't get rid of you. So that's kind of like how like the 10-year architecture came to be. But going back to your question about the dynamic, the first year, I was really, you know, good student, you know, finish my plates and things like that. Then, you know, without any parents, you don't have any curfew. I have a lot of friends from the same building, you know, from fine arts, who were, you know, Rakista boys.
There you go.
And then we always hang out in Merricks, right? Merricks was still,
in España. There you go.
Yeah. Merricks was like all the rock and roll people would hang out.
I was in the club. It's not nowhere near USD. I was a party boy, so that's what I was doing.
Right. So we are on different cliques. So the rock scene in USD. So that's kind of like where you know, like these vices began: drinking, smoking, things like that. You know? And then staying up late, having a rock and roll party. And then I knew some people that were part of a fraternity. So they recruited me. That was like the whole world just spinned when I joined the fraternity. The only fraternity that was legal in USD was Apple Alpha Phi Omega. So I joined that crew. And then that was just like my whole college life, like frat boy stuff. But that also like has a foundation in like before it was like college. I mean, that was like basketball team, and then right now, you know, it's like the fraternity. So organizing events and like service projects, and we were also part of SOCC, which is the student organization in USD. So got to rep them. So the whole university wide experience was opened up to me. Before it was very architecture only in Beato building, Archie boys hanging out with each other. But right now with that exposure, and it also comes with the badge, a lot of altercations with a lot of rival frat and things like that, man. So it was crazy times. So but that gave me like an eye-opener of what Manila life is like and how, you know, crazy are things here, not in Cebu, like laid back, you know, like. Yeah. So that was like, but still, no, pursuing architecture on the side. Now architecture on my side hustle. Well, the frat thing and this frat parties and organizing events for this, and we're kind of like the main college thing. So really just immersed myself in that whole frat boy college experience. Yeah.
Okay. So here's what I wanted to know, because again, people like to put labels very early in a person's life. So I had a similar path, but I did all my stupid and crazy shit in high school. I wasn't doing frat stuff. I was just a class clown. I always got in trouble. Once I got to college after first year, I worked in a call center. Then I realized that it was a 180-degree turn. All of a sudden, I'm now a responsible kid. Thankfully, I finished my college on time, became a student leader and all these things, because I knew now how hard it was. But for a very long time, especially in high school, I was labeled a pariwara. Like, if there was in the States, there's this thing that every high school, they label someone who's least likely to succeed. And if there was, that would have been me. Right. And I was labeled that, like, that guy is fucking, you know, he doesn't just happy go lucky, blah, blah, blah. And if you took that long, people would have thrown that onto you as well. Family, friends, especially during gatherings. But hindsight being 2020, a lot of these things probably helped you out, that when you actually turned the tide and became serious with what you wanted to do, that became as an asset. Was that something you had to go through? And how did you use those bad experiences to actually turn them into assets down the road?
Yeah, man. Like that was like the chip on the shoulder, right? Like if you have that chip in the shoulder, because every family gathering, they were just looking at me with judging eyes, right? Like, oh, here comes the frat boy. Right? Like, that was the usual case. But again, it was like oh, here comes the guy, he on his 8th year in college, right? So,
these things, they put label just because you stumble, they put a bookend and that's it. That's your path now. In reality, you can still turn it around and use that as, again, the chip on your shoulder.
Right.
How did you then turn that around?
Yeah, well, that realization that fuck, you're already 25 and you have nothing to show for. So that's kind of like, okay, I have to be serious and on what I'm doing, and that was just okay. Let's start something and totally just that realization that was like the starting point. That realization that you are. You're onto something. You know deep in yourself that you're more than that. What you're experiencing right now is because there's always like after the parties and all of those stuff that you seem very happy, but at the end of the day, it's like, oh, there's more to this. There's more. Yeah. This can't be it.
It's a phase, right?
And then just the on switch, like, okay, we have to do something else.
Right. Okay. Now, when you turned it on, where did you funnel all of this passion and ability into? How did you hustle first? And what are these things?
So, entrepreneurship, man. It's always been like I always started, like when I was 21, I opened a bar in Quezon City.
What?
Like in Roosevelt, man. It was Roosevelt. I was 21.
Wow.
Yeah. And then all of the college kids are there, even from USD, because it's still one ride, right? Going to
Project 8 people. Yeah, that would be the jeep.
Project
8 Pantranco, that's where you go, basically. that's the route.
Yeah. Okay. And then, so basically that, when I feel a spark of something, then I open something up, right? Whether it's going to be the bar next time. Also like you, but during that 10 years, we were actually suspended for 2 years for an altercation with a rival.
Holy shit. Wow. For
that. And that's where also I have a call center job because nothing to do for this, right?
Oh.
So I actually have my first job at 19. Yeah, at 19 was a call center. And then outbound sales, motherfucker. Credit card pulling and all that.
That's the same shit I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that gave me okay. So I had the gift of gab that I actually can sell shit. Somebody that I don't even have to do face to face with, getting credit their credit cards. I was like, okay, so these are like really hustle, man. Like being a hustler of getting. And that was like we were selling like VoIP, like Skype, another version of Skype, but. They have to pay, and for you to be able to convince them to pay for a free thing, that was like really good training for an entrepreneur to really have your sales skills on point.
Because if you can't sell your startup, again, especially if you're going to be the founder, it's going to be very, very hard for you to acquire customers because the tech won't sell itself, right? And again, it's one of the most foundational skills that you can learn coming out of college or coming out of whatever you came from. Sales, if you can find a way to do it for a specific period of time, and you did this for a couple of years, right? That would be really, really good foundation for you. But when you started your own business, so 2006 to 2008, you were a customer service, right? I mean, you were a sales rep.
Right.
I was also around this time, also this is what I did, but I was doing this full-time and full-time. I was doing studying and this at the same. I only had like 3 hours of freaking sleep. I don't want to do that again. I don't think I can do that again anymore because I can't survive. But when you did your first business with 1600 Bistro, how did you fund this? And what was the very first few learnings? Because again, obviously that also ended in 2010. But what are those things that you learned that you then put into work that down the road you'll use when you do try as a entrepreneur again?
Yeah, well, that realization that you're not an F&B guy. You like to drink and eat, but you don't know how to run a resto bar. Yep. So that realization quickly, like, okay, so that's not the thing, because everybody wants to open a bar, right? But that's not the thing. And then I actually, my parents helped me fund this, and also the earnings that I had from the the call center job. Because that was like, that was making bank, man. Like they, the commissions. Although it started like the salary was 10,000 pesos, the salary, but no, the commissions were crazy if you know how to sell your shit. Right? So, so we were able to fund that. But that, that, that was again, the realization that you're not an F&B guy. You're just in it because you like to drink and eat, but to run this shit, you would rather have somebody else like do that for
you. Oh man, that's funny. No, again, we all this is a phase that everybody goes through. And again, this is a hot take, but the sooner you do this in life, if you're a dude and you just, you know, there's a certain animalistic instinct that you just got to be wild and stupid for a while, do it early.
Yeah.
Right? So at least, because I've seen men also who were good boys in high school and college, and all of a sudden they're like fucking partying. Yeah. And they're over 30. I'm like, bruh, is it a little too late? You're going to frick up, fuck up your family if you have a wife and all that. I'm glad I can talk about that down the road and I'll just laugh about it because, you know, the stakes were not as much and I didn't really make some really bad mistakes. It's still funny. But since I got the taste of that, it's not something that I look for anymore in life. Because some people feel like, oh, shoot, I never got to have fun. And I did. Right. My freaking first startup was a nightlife app. I fucking had a lot of fun. Right. Exactly. But again, it's a phase. It's something that if you get that out of the way and you don't fuck your life up,
right,
it's one for the books.
Yeah, for sure, man. And I actually almost fucked my life up, right? Yeah. We were, especially like with all the violence and shit that we went through, like all those authorities were involved, you know, there were court cases, you know, things like that, man. And at like your early 20s, like late teens, early 20s to go through that, or like, talking to lawyers and shit, like
hell no, fuck.
Yeah, man. And then
trouble I got was principal's office only. That's it, because I was being a class clown. That's it, right? No, nothing more than that. But you're an OG, really, really OG. That's amazing.
Like, serious thing, man. And then seeing, like, looking back and looking at my brads right now who like own businesses and like thriving in their career abroad, like, we would have died back then. Like,
yeah. No, and that's it. Again, there is you can't put a bookend on somebody just because of their mistakes. Everybody has or deserves or earns. Actually, deserve is not the word. Everybody can earn a second chance. And it's what would you do with that? That's important. All right. Let's take our first break. And when we come back, we'll come and talk about your journey into creating Revistap and all the other startups that you're involved with. But let's talk about that more after the break.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate your growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch
at SaaSConPH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April.
But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at SaaSChallenge.ph. That's SaaSChallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24.
And we're back from the break. We are still with OG OJ. There you go.
Who
was gangster? I just talk gangster shit, but this guy's a real gangster. I never got involved into any violence. The only violence I got into is the little pushing and shoving and the dirty talk in the basketball court. But outside, I'm a class clown. That's it. The most I do is I'm a Dapitan boy. You're a Pinoval boy. You're an Espanya boy. I'm a Dapitan boy. I hang out in the billiards area with my teammates, smoke some cigarettes, and that's it. That after that, I go home. All right, so that phase is done. How did you then turn the tide and wrap up? So you've done sales. You now have accumulated that experience. And once that confidence in sales, once you unlock that, dude, it's a life skill that you will take anywhere. Like, I can sell anything to anyone. So what was the next steps you did, and walk us through how it ended up into VR spaces? I mean, Reva staff pala. Sorry, not VR spaces.
We'll go through that. Well, of course, going through the traditional route, right? After architecture school, I dipped my toes into design and construction.
Okay.
And
this is back in Cebu, or were you in Manila still?
It was in Manila still. So I have a partner as well who's also an architect. And then we dipped toes into that, doing the, and then we landed like a big project. So we got almost like a million peso check for our services, and we were like, yeah, like early 20s, right? And so we were like, okay, so what we can do with this shit?
And then, the gangster life will never leave you, my man.
Right. Right, and that was like we bought like crazy. Well, from that we didn't reinvest that into accumulate more clients, right? Mm-hmm. So when in design and construction, a million pesos like nothing, right? It would just go
a lot of money for a bunch of 20-year-olds, though.
Right, exactly. It was a bunch of money for 20-year-olds. But after that project, we only got like really very small flower shops and things like that. So that didn't really sustain, on the business. And then I had an opportunity with a previous colleague to start our own call center, right? So
you did.
Yeah, so we did. We started our own call center in Ortigas. We have like 20 seats. Like, wow. It was me and American partner. Okay. And then during that time, we run like a year, almost a year. And then our client pulled out. Like, you're not even
pulling out. Yeah. Usually it's a good thing when you pull out, but this is not. this was a bad time to pull out.
Right? Yeah, this is a bad time to pull out. You have 30 people who wants, who now, we cannot pay them. So the American guy left, the client left. I was the one left holding the bag. And all the 30 people was asking me for the salary. And the same thing, I was also not earning, right? Mm-hmm. They threatened me to that they would go to Tulfo, that they didn't get their salary and things like that. But we were in the same situations, that like I'm the one holding the bag. So during that time, and I have already like infant kid, right? Like 8 years ago, and then we were receiving like death threats. But I don't really give a fuck about those death threats. No, I've been
been through worse.
Yeah, I've been through worse, and this is like the importance. So the Tulfo thing, and but it's, we were like broke ass, so we can't pay the rent. So I called my mom. We have to go back to Cebu because we're like zero. So we went back to Cebu and then just start from zero, man. Because like the design firm didn't work out, the call center didn't work out. Mm-hmm. It was zero with a kid. and young wife, and then going back to Cebu, just being, you know, having the humility to just knock on my mom's door and like, hey, can we live here? So for like a few months, then like after a month, there was like crazy, man, because my brother in the US called and he said, hey man, I have cancer, can you come here to the US so you can take care of me? And then that was I realized that God didn't made the business thrive, because it would have been hard for me to say yes.
Yeah.
If I have a thriving business that is taking care of 30 people. So that was all went down. But then, you know, my brother needs my help because he doesn't want my mom to be there, because it will be hard for him. He's going to be crying all the time, right? And then being depressed as shit. But he wants to be the big brother to go there, and we can just hang out and play video games. And he is undergoing his chemo and things like that. So I went to the States. I went to the States, and then from there, because I don't have anything to do, it's just getting him, driving him to the hospital, and I'm just gonna hang back, right? So I was looking for side hustles, and that's where I created like floor plans for realtors. So I was like looking for things to do. It's like, okay, I want to have a job for an architectural firm, but there's no architectural firm. I'm getting side hustles from realtors. Hey, can you do this floor plan for me? Can you do this 3D work for me from the realtors? And that's where, okay, there's this market right here. And then when my brother's done with the chemo and they went back to the Philippines, I still have these clients.
Correct. You built the foundation technically for RevaStaff.
Exactly. This is the foundation for RevaStaff, doing floor plans for realtors.
But okay, I want to track back a little bit, because again, failure and, you know, humble pie, when that hits you, and I think you're cut out from the same cloth as me. There's a little bit, there's pride. We take pride in what we do. And when we fail, of course, the very first thing that you need to do is survive. You know, you gotta swallow that pride and do that. But again, that also scars you for life, right? Mm-hmm. During that time where, again, you had to run back to Cebu, leave your family for a bit, take care of your brother. We know what you did to, you know, technically open the next phase of your life. But how did you bounce back inside? Because this was a blur. This was a whirlwind of events that you had to go through. And, you know, you have to be strong. You have a family to feed. You have a wife. You have kids. And now you have to be a brother. But in the end, you're still a hustler. In the end, you have to provide,
right,
while battling your own demons. How did you cope?
Well, it was really hard, but quieting the noise, no, just quieting the noise. And no, because outside, you're this bad person who didn't pay up, right? You're this bad person who left the company. You're this bad person. But do you know deep inside that you're the same victim? But I don't want to have that victim mentality. I don't want to be crying on the corner and just, oh, the client pulled out, things like that. Mm-hmm. But it was really restoring. Like, no, I've been to Catholic school all my life, and that going back to basics in you know, faith in God and prayer, and that really made me stronger. Like that belief that, you know, this is not it. You know, this is a phase that you're going through. And I went into a retreat, you know, because my dad is a very pious man, and he asked me, hey, just go to the retreat, talk to the priest, things like that. And then one of the advice me, like you just have to have fortitude. Like, you know, God wouldn't allow you to go through this stuff if there's nothing on the other side for you. So just keep, and you can't see that if you're undergoing that.
No,
that
you have to remove yourself from that situation have perspective.
Yeah. So just having the faith, keeping up the faith, and that actually, you know, just going through it day by day, because it's been months, right? Months before we were able to even get back to our feet. From Cebu, it was probably a year or so, but it was just going through it day to day that no, there's something on the other side of this. You just have to quiet the noise of all those people bugging you, and just quiet the noise, things like that, and then just move on. But just move on a day to day basis. Yeah, and finally, when I was already doing the side gigs, and then these realtors were asking me already to do projects for them. That's like very, very slowly. I haven't even thought of opening another company. It was just
You're just trying to build the confidence, and then step by step.
Right.
And you're right, because when my first startup also failed, you quiet all the noise, but there's one noise that was really, really loud that is very hard to overcome. And till now, it's still there. You just have an antidote to it now. The noise inside your head,
right?
Because the worst enemy that you'll have is sometimes yourself as an entrepreneur when you fail. Because right. I was like, oh shoot, there's gonna be a point where you're just gonna say, shit, this is all your fault, right? And that's on you. You can't put the blame on everybody else. But at the end of the day, you're the founder. You are the one in charge of these people. And that never leaves. And sometimes it's really how you process that inner noise and shut him up with results. I mean, that's what I kind of did. Like, you know what? The biggest thing I had to go over and try to overcome is that noise. The output of that is doubt. And especially if you're a hustler, you can't be walking into a freaking meeting and have doubt, because that would translate in the way you pitch, your body language, and the way you even do your business. If you doubt yourself, how will people even try to trust you? What was the turning point, OJ, when you realized that, shit, okay, I got my mojo back and I have something from these clients that I have from the realtors that I can take back all the way to the Philippines and start anew and now turn it eventually into Revestaff? How did you build that up again?
Yeah, so when I came back to the Philippines, I was thinking of it as, okay, I have now a solid side hustle. Let me go back to construction. Let me go back to design construction. So I still, you know, look for design projects. And so I have a couple, you know, we were designing restaurants and things like that. But I still have this solid side hustle who's... I have like a few clients already for the floor plan gig. And then these clients ask me, hey, do you know also graphic artists can then do our photos? Do you have video editors that can do our videos? Okay, I'll find people for you. And then just realizing like half my time is now devoted to this side gig. And then I was having a really hard time of sustaining the construction business. And I was like, okay, let's just do this one instead. Like, this is like a realization that just hit me like this. Staring right in front of me that I wasn't ready to accept yet, because I'm supposed to be an architect. So that was like my identity. I was supposed to be an architect. I was supposed to be in design and construction. But there's this thing which I consider just a side hustle that's just knocking and hey, we're here. And I'm the one even putting off the list. Hey, can we delay your project for a couple of days because I have something else to do? Like, but it was like, yeah, okay, we'll pay you double. Okay. So it was like, okay, it was so easy on this side and it's so hard, but I'm just trying to because okay. that's my identity, right? So that switch of realizing, okay, again, the humility, that the traditional route is actually not for you, and the startup, that's where like the startup thing, like, okay, so, and then Silicon Valley was on, right? The HBO series. So all that Shark Tank. So I was already watching Shark Tank in the US. So I was like, okay, maybe this is the thing. So let me just really try and focus on this thing. So recruited a few more people to join the team. So it's not just me doing the floor plans. I have now a couple of people. So we're like three in the team already, handling like 20 clients.
Nice.
And that was it. And then in 2018, there was in the real estate, Reva was a buzzword, right? So real estate virtual assistant, basically. That's
what it meant.
Yeah. Okay. Real estate virtual assistant, and the cheapest domain name that I can find is revastaff.com, which is less than 1,000 pesos. With 700 pesos, I paid for 700 pesos. Wow,
that's amazing.
And that's I was agnostic what name it is, because it was supposed to be my side hustle, right? So okay, let's put it revastaff.com. Not registering anything. It's just a domain name, build the website. And that was it. Like from 3 people to 5 to 6 to 7 to 10 people during that year. And then 2019 came, and DTI have this accelerator program called Startup Island, and they were calling for applications. Okay. Yep. So I was thinking that we are actually not a startup, but we're a BPO, right? But then, okay, let's also call ourselves a startup, and and
tech-enabled startup.
Tech-enabled startup. So I joined that accelerator, and that's where I immersed myself in what's supposed to be like in pitching and things like that.
Nice.
And that was it. Like the first accelerator that we got, and then got to final pitch late that year.
Nice.
Yes,
the season after us, technically.
Right, exactly. Season, real estate edition. Yep. Right? That was the real estate edition season. And then one of my clients asked, hey guys, can you do VR? Like, yeah, we can do VR. What the fuck is VR? Right? And then went into that rabbit hole of, that was like, for me, I don't know anything about VR back then. So we went to Manila. Mm-hmm. And registered in the VR Philippines Game Jam. So there was like they are making VR games.
Right.
Now, and when I went there, I recruited these kids who can actually make games. And I said, hey, how about I sold them on the idea of let's make a game, a VR game that is like a Sims. So instead of Sims, it's gonna be VR first person, and they got that. So they were cool with that, and they were able to build that for me, and we showed that to the client, and so now we're into the VR game. Now we're a real tech startup.
There you go. And again, this is something that you had no prior experience on, and that's one thing that again, if you see an opportunity, you know how to build a team around it. You don't have to know how to build it. As long as you can understand how you can sell it and how it can solve problems, then you can build a company around it. That's where a lot of people have a misconception that you have to be an expert in something. It's a plus, yes, to be an expert into something before you do a business around it. I created Chatbot PH with no idea how to freaking create a chatbot. I knew how to sell it. I knew how to help build it at least at the basic level. Then the next thing I had to do was build a team that can actually materialize the vision. The hard part is the vision and also building it into reality, because that's where most people fail. But I'll just track back a little bit with Revistaff here. So one of the things that people usually struggle with, especially if you're coming in at a freelance background, is coming in as a Reva or a VA, getting used to doing all the work, and they don't cross the chasm to become an entrepreneur where you build a team around you, because the mindset is still, I still have to be the guy, which here you did pretty well. But was there any struggle coming from that? Knowing also that here you are again, hiring people, but this time you don't have a partner. Mm-hmm. This time it's all you, and you got to make sure that everybody's fed and you don't make the same mistake. Was that something in your mind, and what did you do differently this time?
Well, that's actually, for me, that was already an advantage, because I know already the pitfalls, like what to avoid. So
you failed before.
Actually, the failures I had in the past on my fourth company, that was like, okay, I know now where not to spend as much, because there's a lot of, they think that if they spend on marketing, that would translate to, you know, to conversion, but it's not the case usually. So I didn't build a sales team right away.
You were the hustler. The sales team.
Yeah, I was the sales team. I'm the only sales team, and then we what we built is like the fulfillment, the product, the production team.
Got it.
You have to have a very solid production team, because
if you can't deliver, you're gonna be in a shitload of trouble.
exactly. So that's kind of like where we built first, and then it's always 1-to-1. So the what I mean is 1-to-1 ratio is that if I hire a production person, that translates into, you know, revenue, right? Because and then in our business model, we pay them per output. So if they don't work, they don't get paid. So that's kind of like, there's no downside, right? Mm. So if we don't have an order, especially during winter time, which is snowing in New York, so everybody also, you know, I don't have an overhead. So that's kind of like, that's kind of like where it started from where it started. So I'm clean already. So they already know from the very beginning, but they're making bank as well, because if we have a lot of orders, no, from their previous, so they just did, we did the math. No, if they are a layout artist in a tarpaulin shop in, you know, downtown Cebu, they're probably earning less than minimum wage. Here they're working with American clients. If they're gonna do one floor plan, it's gonna be, you know, 200 pesos. If I'm just gonna do 10 floor plans, I'm gonna get, you know, 2,000 pesos a day. So, wow. So that's kind of like the mindset that I instilled in them, that okay, you're actually gonna make bank in the long term, even though, you know, you let go of the security of the SSS and the pag-ibig and all of those shit, right, that really count for. So we have like a freelance contract with them, independent contractor agreement, and that's kind of where it started, because and it also makes sense for me as a business owner just to do that, and that's a very scalable model as well. So I, from the very beginning, was already thinking about scale, already thinking about how we would be able to move this forward. So it's just going to be a one-to-one revenue. So every production crew that we hire, it's actually adding more to the bottom line rather than to overhead.
Got it. Several questions that I have. It's you had a grand vision how you wanted to build, but again, in order to hire the right people, as you kept onboarding clients, you're going to have to keep onboarding your production team. How hard was it? And then how did you make sure that, number one, they're at par of how you used to work, or the standard of that you like to do? And number two, how did you make sure that they don't poach your client directly?
That's a good thing about running a creative organization rather than a sales organization. A sales organization is very tricky because they can actually just poach your clients, because there's also salespeople, right? But these creatives doesn't actually want to talk to clients. They just want to be in the
front
of their computer, yep, 8 hours a day, not talking to clients, and just for you to siphon projects directly to them. And that's going to be, you know, and for them to make bank, they are good with that. So the probability of poaching clients was already, I think, addressed at that nice structure alone. And then at the same time, the quality of these people, we got from, you know, the experience ones. So portfolio, and then having an architecture background also really helps, because I now know how to look at stuff if they're good or not. I have the eye already for that because of my architecture background. And nice. That, in hindsight, that was actually good, because if I didn't talk up architecture, if I didn't go through the 10 years of God, I wouldn't have developed this skill.
There's no way you're going to get QA, or there's going to be some shit work all the time that nobody's going to be willing to pay for.
Right, exactly.
All right. So now with this VR space, is this a different company that you had to build? Because I know you have different co-founders here, and you now are selling, again, laying out layouts with Revestaff. But now there's another thing that you're also founder, CEO, as VR space. Is this some a spin-off startup? How did you structure this? And then this time, how did you balance your time? Because before, for a while, it was only Revestaff. Now right. There's also VR spaces. How did you make that work?
Yeah, so for VR spaces, it's basically Revestaff that is catering to local clients. So because for Revestaff, we have local clients now asking us for OR. We can't have, and then that would now our accounting, because most of all of our clients in Revestaff are international.
Right.
And if we're gonna
quick
do
transaction
that,
through Stripe, through TransferWise, whatever the hell they're using, right?
Yeah. And so that's kind of like, and we have so for VR spaces, and also for Revestaff, most of us are working graveyard, right? So it's US time. So for VR spaces, I was thinking, okay, we have to have a Philippine team that's totally not involved with Revestaff, because Revestaff is still the back end that powers VR spaces. So every time that VR space have a sale, that's basically like our clients in the US who outsource to us what they're doing on the ground, because we partner with photographers on the ground in the US. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the day, the photographers just give us the files and rev us that process, do the post-production work. Now, VR Space does the same thing for the Philippine clients. Basically, VR Space is a client of Revastap.
Gotcha.
So in time-wise, it just makes sense to have a different team in the Philippines that can execute it on the ground. But all the back end is still being done by Revastap. So I didn't really have any time constraints of doing that. It's just like, instead of talking to US clients, now we talk to Filipino clients.
That is amazing. All right. Now, in this said, again, these are very much in line and in tune, but we're talking about 24-hour production here.
Yeah, man.
How did you change the way you manage this thing? Because it's not easy. So it's similar manner. Again, you know this. We turned our production capability. The only difference is I have a full-time employee when I do this. But I want to understand several things. From your end, OJ, when you do this, what was the biggest change in terms of leadership throughout these years that you have went through? Again, Revastap as a solo flight guy, and all of a sudden, you know, adding teams and making sure that you have other freelancers that work or independent contractors with you, and now also VR Spaces. How did you change as a leader over time? And what were those things you had to instill to make sure that as you kept scaling, the whole, you know, ethos of the business stays the same?
Self-awareness is really I always, you know, reflect and be really self-aware of what my weaknesses are. Okay. So, for example, as a solo founder at first, the first recruit that I have as a co-founder was a tech guy, because I'm not a tech guy, right? So Mario came in.
Shout out, Mario. How are you?
Shout out to Mario, our CTO. So Mario came in 2020, helping us build the tech platform, and then going into this accelerator program. It's basically the leadership is actually how do I manage my skill set and also know the weaknesses that I have. So I have to hire my weaknesses.
Correct.
So and recruit them, because at this point we still can't afford, you know, international or market rate, right, for these international talent that we have, right? Mm-hmm. Or so definitely we can't pay market rate for the C-level executives that I wanted to be on the team. Hence, it's always equity and always the vision that it's going to be one day everybody will be, you know, sipping pina coladas on the beach. And that's...
I like that you're very specific about the drink too, by the way.
Right. So that's where Mario came in. And then now in the accelerator program, Cognity Labs, you know, that's where, you know, our advisor, Julian, also came on board as a CCO. Shout out, Julian. So all of these guys, actually, if you look at our C level, and right now we recruited a COO, Matt, who's a BPO executive who has exited his last BPO, who scaled a company to 2,000 employees. Now he's going to be running he's going to be our COO. If you look at our C-suite, I'm actually the weakest guy in the room, right? So and that's what it, because if I'm like the strongest leader there, what are they there for? Like, so I can just do it myself, right? So right now it's like giving those tasks to people that's actually experts in what they do, rather than me doing it myself. So it was really, it took us a long time to hire these C-level people, but right now, looking back to actually I was very hesitant of getting of putting C labels right away, because we didn't really need a COO back then when I was operating everything.
Yeah.
Right? But right now, as we scale,
you need that, right? And again, if you're the smartest guy in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Exactly.
And one trait of a founder, especially if you're gonna be CEO, is how to recruit and build the right team.
For sure.
Right. And majority of the time, actually all the time, you should hire people who are better than you on certain things. You have to replace yourself on certain aspects of the business so that you can also tackle on new things. And again, congratulations for doing such a great job building that. Now let's take our last break, and when we come back, let's talk about the next steps that you guys are building with RevoStaff and the other stuff that you're doing on the side, because this is not the last one. Okay, but let's talk about that more after the break. Hey Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup, because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes, all the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.eh payroll-starter-monthly-5k, or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey Hustlers, I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor Dragon Pay is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, Dragon Pay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disburse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. Dragon Pay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit Dragon Pay is. Dragon Pay was named FinTech of the Year at last year's Philippine FinTech Festival in 2023. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust Dragon Pay. Hey Hustlers, before we start this episode, I want to share with you this amazing tool that we started using in Podcast Network Asia and PodMachine lately, and it's called Narrator.ai. Now, prior to using Narrator, one of our biggest problems in our startup was centralizing the tons of data that we have from all our podcasts and how users were using our product. We had so much data, the problem was we didn't have the right tool to interpret and make decisions fast out of them. Now, this meant we did a lot of risky guessing, which thankfully we got right, but we were a bad move away from screwing it all up. Now, instead of hiring a whole data team or building this whole thing from the ground up, we were lucky to find Narrator. Because as a startup, you need a tool that allows you to make the necessary pivots needed to scale up with your data that you can use to make great decisions fast. And Narrator is the fastest, easiest, and the most comprehensive way to get value out of your data warehouse. No more need for hundreds of rigid data models that take forever to update and can only handle a limited number of use cases. Using Narrator's activity schema, explore and analyze any data in your warehouse without having to write SQL. And I swear, if you're a startup that's scaling or a company that's undergoing digital transformation, this will blow you away. So all you have to do is go to narrator.ai and book a demo. Trust us, this is awesome. And we're back from the break. We are still with OJ, who then told us how he was able to bounce back from the fumbles he had to go through very, very early in his career. And now, you know, build a really profitable business in RevoStaff and VR Spaces. But again, I told y'all at the start of this episode, this is not the only thing this guy does. He has a few more. right? So let's talk about the other stuff, because I just saw you again in the final. I was like, what? He is back.
Shout out John Aguilar, right?
Yeah. Suki, you're the Suki of Johnny Aguilari. There you go. But I want to understand, what's this thing, Peiram, and how are you involved with this? Because again, it's not like you shut down and exited Forever Staff in VR Spaces. This is well alive and kicking, but you now have Peiram. What is Peiram, and what's your involvement here?
Yeah, well, basically, there are a lot of startups in Cebu that are consulting with me. We don't have like a champion startup in Cebu that we can just go through, and that was my struggle before. Like,
there's
like,
the Simp guys though. They're the oldest guys.
Yeah.
George Padin.
Yeah. Albert and Dave has always been our mentor of ours. Mm-hmm. No, but these startups that are new, who doesn't know these guys, and then for me. For them to just have a beer with me and things like that, no. So I'm like, they can reach out, no? And then we can just have a beer together. And from that,
Cebu Merix. Just kidding. No. Don't get back there anymore. No. That's something you don't even go there. All right. So these guys are basically young ends in the startup ecosystem. You're right. There isn't any like champion yet. Maybe that's you. Who's gonna be, you know, bannering the whole Vismin area actually in startups, who will blow the roof open? It's just a matter of time. But walk me through this process of, again, basically paying it forward to those founders who were like you starting out at one point, mm-hmm. but needed mentorship. And how did you get involved?
Yeah, for in the case of Peiram, it was just, hey, we want to get into the final pitch. Can you help us? No problem, man. So it was just like that. No, they just give me a very, a very little piece. But I'm okay with that, even without the piece, right? Mm. I'm just glad that I can help pave the way, especially if they wanna go to Manila, the Manila market, which I am in the unique position of doing that, because I lived 12 years in Manila and then I grew up in Cebu. So that balance that, I'm not as scared to go to Manila as many of them are, because they're not exposed to how Manila is. And for me, it was just very natural. It's like a second home already, because I lived there. It was my first home before. So that's kind of like, I'm consulting with a lot of these startups who wants to go to the Manila market, how to launch there, things like that. So that's kind of like where all these startups that they think that is, I'm like the guy, because I'm just out there. But basically, I spend like 1 hour a week with these guys, right? So it doesn't really.
It's an advisor. Technically.
Yeah, as an advisor, so not really doing. So like 90% of the time that I have is still, Reva staff, and like 10% of the time is all through these other projects that I have, and basically just consulting, advising work.
Right, but there's one thing that you're doing that I've tried actually very early on 2019. VNI. All right, so this VNI, I tried that thing, and again, I really love what they're doing. It's just that I cannot commit the weekly time, yeah. Especially at the time slot that they want it to be. Okay. Yeah. I'm a diesel guy. So a diesel guy, I start slow, but once I get warmed up, I get my flow, right? But I cannot wake up 7 a.m., go to a place and go through the same routine week on week. It's just not me. But again, for those people who don't understand what BNI stands for, I won't steal your thunder. I let you do this because you're the president of the BNI investment chapter in Cebu. What do you guys do in BNI, and how beneficial is it to do giver's gain for entrepreneurs and great professionals in BNI?
Yeah, so basically BNI is acronym for Business Network International. We're founded in America 37 years ago. So it's already been... it's in existence for 37 years, came into the Philippine shores like less than 10 years ago. So it's very quite new in the Philippines. And that's the motto is changing the world, how the world does business. So basically, business owners, entrepreneurs come together like a local business club. And the intention is actually to give business or refer business to each other. Like, for example, in our case, we have in our team, there's power teams. Like, so all of our professionals in the real estate space actually is that are non-competitive. So if you go into a BNI chapter, if you're an architect, then there's no architect that they can actually get into their chapter except for you. So all of the architecture projects would ideally be referred to you. No, but of course you have to deliver as well. You have to, hence that's where we really see to it that our members are of quality. So it's not just if you're a rookie, then you can just join a BNI chapter. You could, no, but you really have to. You have a year to actually prove yourself because the renewal is not automatic. So if you fucked up, then we won't renew you for the next year.
Yeah,
so I've been a member for 3 years, and currently I'm the chapter president. So that's kind of like what we do on a weekly basis. As Ron said, it's intense. It's intense.
Not for me. I like it, but it's not for me. Right.
It's that. So it's really built for those who would want to really grow their network. And then in the Philippines, we have already like 44 chapters, about 1,000 members in the Philippines. In Cebu, where we're quite low in number compared to Manila, of course, obviously. But it's very, actually it keeps me grounded because a lot of these businesses in BNI are traditional mom and pop businesses. Yep. And as a tech startup, they're talking about this high SaaS and and AI and whatever in the tech space. And here's BNI talking about building relationships,
having profit, because again, right, sometimes exactly. it can be two different sides of the spectrum where startups are all talking about grow at all costs,
right.
burn money, raise funding. Here in traditional businesses, yes, the growth isn't that going to be that aggressive, but you're building it with good fundamentals, which is earn profit, build a pipeline, build a network, be reciprocal, which is again translates from the start of time. That's how business was done.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah. It also gives you a whole new perspective in how you can actually operate your startup, right?
For sure.
Because at the end of the day, the objective of a startup is to somehow become a business down the road. The sooner you can do that, the better. Which is again one thing you've done with RevStaff, with VR Spaces. You've always had a pipeline. You did not have to rely on outside funding to keep afloat, right? So there, amazing.
And ever since, we've been bootstrapped ever since. So still running it traditionally, although we're trying to raise funds right now with the help, of course, of the people that can actually deliver it. Because for me, before, I don't know what I was doing.
Right. Yeah. And again, you're now part of the latest cohort, the first cohort of the Idea Space Accelerator program. Congratulations. I saw that. But with this new direction that you're getting into, you're past the year three threshold of startups, right? But you recently just got to the accelerator in Idea Space. What's next for you guys in VR Spaces? VR Spaces. I keep saying VR Spaces. We're RevStaff. There you go.
Yeah. Well, it's always the same. The business model is actually Julian coined this. No. So to make the VPO. The visualizations process outsourcing industry. So all of the visuals. So right now we're starting with real estate. So all the visuals for real estate. So whether it's photos, videos, AR, VR, CGI, 3D, whatever, visualizations that you need to sell out your real estate properties or construction projects, RevStaff can do it. Now we're looking to other verticals, low hanging fruits like furniture. So we haven't even dip our toes into that. Engineering, architecture, automotive, cars need visuals too, right?
Absolutely.
And
the ticket prices for that are high. This is not, this is B2B. So this is always good.
Yeah. So that's kind of like just building that industry. In reality, seeing that graphic artist that came from a tarpaulin shop in downtown Cebu and right now earning $1,000-$2,000 a month.
Ooh, wow.
Able to uplift their quality of lives to what they have right now, able to remodel their house, able to afford a secondhand car. And seeing that person, and we can duplicate that to 200, 2,000 artists that can actually have a career in what they do best, rather than just have a menial clerical job somewhere, but their passion really is to do art and is to do creative work, just like those classmates that we have in the past, scribbles all day, doesn't really listen to teachers. These are the people that we have working for us right now. And that's what we are enabling in Reva staff, to build that network of visual artists that can actually build a career out of it, and at the same time have a win-win for our clients as well, to leverage, right, the Philippine workforce and how cheap they can get it and how reasonable and affordable they can get compared to a graphic artist in the mainland. So it's a win for them. It's also a win for the creative industry in the Philippines.
All right. I just have one last question before we go. Because again, this is something that I only get to ask for people that have, again, we have very similar paths. We were labeled a fuck up before, turned it around, made a shit ton of mistakes, but ended up turning out very well still. But if we go through the Hustle Share time machine one more time and go back to that, to certain points where, you know, you wish you can change something or you regret doing, what would those be and how would you do this differently?
I actually don't think about that, Ron. I think all the fuck ups that I did in the past was actually relevant. And all of those should have been fucked up so that I can do better at this time. So if I didn't fuck it up before, I would still be fucking it up right now.
Correct.
And I'm still fucking it right now, so that in the future, so all of the mistakes that I'll be doing right now, mm-hmm. and seeing it some, it's actually part of the process. So right. if I'm not doing my mistakes, I'm not even trying, right? There's some quote somewhere there about if you're not doing a mistake, you're not even trying. So that's kind of how. So looking at it and looking at it as a regret or doing something differently, it would have a different outcome. So right now, I think all of the semi successes that we have are because of those fuck ups and because we were able to adjust. And without those fuck ups, we won't be able to adjust because we don't have a benchmark to go to anyway. So that's how I think about it.
That is absolutely amazing. Again, thank you so much, OJ. And again, if people want to reach out, get your mentorship, say they're in the Visayas area, or they want to work with you in VR spaces and whatnot, where do they go? And how do they reach out to you?
Yeah, just always email me, ojlopez@revastaff.com. There you go.
There you go. Very easy. You're adding on LinkedIn, on Facebook. He replies very, very, very fast. There you go. And you're grabbing my beer. He likes beer. There you go. Just not too much pollutant. No? He's lost weight like me already.
We're
trying to turn back from that shit. All right, we done. But before I let you go, follow us on whatever podcast app you're listening to, or again, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any type of podcast app. And at the end, if we did say some jargon, it's going to be the show notes on HustleShare.com. And lastly, if you want to be part of the Hustle Share community, which OJ is part of, he says he's number 5, but I don't get to really update to its full potential, just join it. It's going to be the Hustle Share community on Facebook. And again, OJ, thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it, man.
All right, I'll see you soon, my man. And I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.